Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, are you looking forward to reading some good books this summer? I hope you are. And we have a person here who's going to help you out. Daniel Golden is back with us to share some of his favorites. He is the owner of Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee. It's always such a treat to have him come by. And certainly, I hope you'll join in with our conversation as we move along. What book would you like to recommend from your own summer reading list? What genre do you prefer to read in the summer? You can be part of the conversation. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Daniel Golden, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be in person.
It's great to have you in person. And you always come up with the greatest list. What was your criteria for making this summer list?
I had grand plans, but in the end, I do get to read a lot of books. Not as much as our buyer, but respectable. And so I decided that I wasn't going to stumble about trying to talk about a book that I didn't know. So I went with 10 books. They had to be out between the last week in April and the second week in August. And they couldn't all exactly be the same because I, like so many readers, I tend to get tunnel focused and read, you know, the similar, you know, there are people out there who you could just read James Patterson books every month. He has a bio, which is a little different right now. But even if it's not like the same author, you know, you're like, well, that sounds like the last book you read. So I tried to mix in some nonfiction, some historical stuff, things like that.
Well, it's an interesting list. You have 20 books on the list, as I said, 14 different categories, and some are a bit unusual. One that stood out was quarter-life crisis fiction.
Well, you know, I don't think you'll go in a bookstore and find that category, but it's surprisingly popular, and I'll explain why. Because so much fiction, both literary and commercial, comes from people in writing programs. Madison has an amazing writing program. Milwaukee has a good writing program at UWM. And those people get out of school about 25. And so they're working on their novels, and there is this sort of quarter-life crisis that people go through.
Yeah.
You know, you're done with everything so structured for you, and then you have to figure out what you're doing with the rest of your life. And it is surprising how many books are about that. I think the one that I had, I might have even had two, but one that I was talking about was All This Could Be Different by Sarah Thankham Matthews. So coming out at the beginning of August, and it's got several Wisconsin ties. She went to UW-Madison. The book is actually set in Milwaukee, and it's about a young woman working for a tech company, unnamed, but if you're from Southeast Wisconsin, you'll figure out what it is, she is a contractor. And so she doesn't have a really great It's a good company, but it's not a great job at the company. And she's trying to navigate friendships, love life, figure out a sense of belonging. She's an Indian American, so she belongs in some ways and feels left out in other ways. Like many stories of younger people, she is looking for a woman. She may or may not have come up with a good match. So, but it's not a romance. You know, that's the thing about them is like, we do, where romance is explosive. We read romances like crazy in the store, but this is definitely more of like I said, of a 25, that 25 finding yourself coming of age sort of, but I always think of coming of age novels as being a little more like teen.
Yeah. Like South of Luck. That's a coming of age, Jim Gould's book.
Okay. Well, do you think all the listeners know about the book? Do you want to say?
Well, it was our book of the. It was.
Oh, that was right. So in the book club, right?
It was the book. It was the book club. So I think a lot.
So it's like displayed in my store right up front. So,
and that's kind of a coming of age story. But he was surprised. When I interviewed him, he said, "I thought it would, you know, be younger people would be reading it." But he said, you know, he said even teenagers might read it. But he said, really, the main bulk of the readership seems to be coming from older.
Yeah.
Older people.
It's funny, like what you think of as being targeted to the age of the people you're writing is often winds up being more targeted to the age of the people who are reading it. It becomes more of an exercise in nostalgia.
Yeah, and it's set in Wisconsin in 1945, right. And, you know, so there's all that. He's built in some great history, you know, and the town itself, Milltown, is an actual town, and Luck, Wisconsin, too, so.
We'll tell him to do the graphic novel adaptation, maybe, and that might get some younger readers involved. Oh, maybe some book talk videos going.
Yeah. Maybe he's listening. Today, it could well be Daniel Colton, our guest today, as we take a look at his reading list. And here I'm popping in with some of my own for summer. You can join in too. Questions, comments. Maybe you've got an idea of a book that you want to read, or maybe a recent book that you really liked. I hope you'll join in. 800-642-1234. Email us to ideas@wpr.org. The other category that may need some explanation, I think, is found family fiction. What kind of books fall under that one?
You know, it's a surprising, especially if you look at the popular book club picks, both like, the Today Show, Good Morning America, the Reese. So what I consider found family is sort of like struggling people who are sort of struggling with their lives, who maybe sometimes have been rejected by their own family and sometimes just don't have the ties, find themselves connecting to other people and bonding in a way that's sort of a little more beyond friendship. I have a book that I really like this spring that we've been doing very well with called Remarkably Bright Creatures. And that is actually about a gentleman looking for his family. The focus, though, he's only one of the characters. The other one is a 70-something woman who she's a widow and she just can't stop working. So she's the janitor in an aquarium. And actually the third character is a giant octopus named Marcellus. And Marcellus has about almost a third of the story. And, you know, giant octopus are very smart. And the book is somewhat inspired by Cy Montgomery's Soul of an Octopus. I'm sure you love Montgomery.
Oh, yeah.
And it is just this, you know, there's a lot of emotion in it. I'm not sure if it's a weepy, but it's definitely heartfelt. But it's also very smart and beautifully written. And it is really about connection. You know, I do think so many of the books I love, when I thought about it, really were about found family. Another book that I sort of put in that category is a book by beautiful cover, which people can't see, but they can see online, Search by Michelle Hunnevin. And her book, James Land, was about 20 years ago, and it was a classic story of these sort of lost souls who come together. It was based on the varieties of religious experience, so there was a lot of philosophical thought involved. This is a similar book in that it's set at a UU congregation, and it's about a woman who's a restaurant reviewer who is asked to join the search committee for her congregation. And she's put in this group with people that she thinks she's going to agree with, some younger, some older. They think that they're all on the same page, but they're not on the same page. And it would appeal to it. It's a very odd premise, but it's very funny. It's a lot about different kinds of spirituality, and it's a lot about bonding with other people and also not bonding, like people who aren't always going to agree with you and how you move forward with that, which I think is a very important lesson for today.
So that was Search.
Search by Michelle Hunnevin, yeah.
That sounds interesting too. Well, we're getting through a few of them here. Let's take funny family fiction. And you picked Marrying Ketchups.
Yes. So Marrying the Ketchups is, that's a like a restaurant kind of idiom where I don't think people do it anymore. But at the end of the day at a shift, I worked in a cafe once. You take all the half used bottles and you kind of pour them up and then throw away the old ones. And so this is, but I love family comedies, and I used to call them dysfunctional family comedies. But now I realize that that dysfunction is more every family comedy, you know, like that. That's just the way we are, especially when we get along with family. And if we didn't, it wouldn't be much of a novel. This is set in a restaurant. It's a really great restaurant novel set in Oak Park, a very traditional family restaurant. And three things happen in 2016. The Cubs win the World Series. Trump wins the presidency a little unexpectedly. And the patriarch of a bud of Sullivan's dies. And this throws the family into disarray. I gave it to my sister who was worked in restaurants and serving and also assistant managing. And she said, oh, this woman has it down perfectly. But it is two siblings and a cousin who are going to try to move forward with this. They're drawn back from the family. They've tried to pull away. It's kind of a quarter life crisis because one of them tried to make a life as a musician in New York. And she, you know, you get to that point where you're an artist and you're like, it's not going to happen. I'm not going to be successful. I got to get out of this eventually, or maybe never. And a lot of, and so they all come together and does things happen? Is it a happy ending? I'm not sure. Maybe, you know, it is an ending, and it, and life moves forward the way life does. I became completely obsessed with Jennifer Close. I'd never read her before, and I don't know what I was, why not. And I went, actually in the next 3 months, I read every one of her books. I think she's hilarious.
I'm trying to remember. We had Jennifer Close on the show.
You did?
Interviewed her, and this is a couple of years back, I think.
Maybe for The Hopefuls, her book about the person working in the Obama cabinet?
No.
Girls in White Dresses, the smart one.
Hmm. Yeah.
One of those.
Might have been. Yeah, I honestly can't remember. I just remember talking with her.
I think she was fun.
Something in White Dresses?
Girls in White Dresses.
Girls in White Dresses. Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, I just gave that. Somebody asked me for a wedding shower gift, and the book is about a bunch of, it's also a quarter life crisis novel, see, I'm gonna just use that all day long, and it's about a group of friends who are slowly getting married and one of them doesn't get married, but she's very perceptive about people, like she's a good observer.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I really liked, and she also clearly, especially in the early books, was channeling Laurie Colwin, who's one of my favorite writers. So that was one. The funny thing about her books is at least one of them was set in a resort community. And I thought, well, this is summer. You got to have a vacation read. And so I thought, oh, this is also a family. It's funny. I don't think you'd call it a comedy. This is a book called The Shore. And it's set in the Jersey Shore, and it follows this family who are not vacationers. They're behind the scenes. The mom rents out homes. And it's, like I said, it's funny, but it's also very sad and poignant because it's about a rotating story of a mother and two of the daughters. And the father has been diagnosed with a brain tumor.
Oh.
And he has so they have to kind of come to terms with the grief involved. But I think funny and sad are actually the best two combinations of emotions for books. You can argue that out for me. A lot of people obviously like scary, but I'm a delicate flower, so I don't like scary so much. But one of my favorite parts of this book is they're having so much trouble communicating that the mother, though, has gone on one of those like web social media groups where you connect with other people dealing with these problems. So one of the daughters goes on and catfishes her mom. Like she pretends to be someone else so that she can befriend her. So both fun. And it's funny, but it's also sad.
Oh, man. Daniel Golden, our guest today. We are talking through his summer reading list for you. And I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. What kind of books do you like to read on vacation? Do you have a book to suggest for summer reading? And other questions for Daniel. I hope you'll join in. Again, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Tyler Ditter, our engineer today. Jill Nadeau, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network as we take a look at a potential summer reading list for you here in 2022. Daniel Golden, our guest expert. He is the owner of Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee, one of the great bookstores anywhere in the country, as a matter of fact. And it's always wonderful to have him come by. Questions for him or ideas to share of your own relating to good books to read? I hope you'll join us. 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Barb emailed to ask if you have a couple of mystery series you could recommend. Series.
Well, you know, I know this is embarrassingly for a bookseller to say something, to recommend something that seems like it's obvious, but I've really been surprised by how many people don't read Tana French's series. And I just actually, you know, it's a Dublin, they're sort of police procedurals, but they rotate through protagonists. And the first one is In the Woods, and you should read them in order because both of my sisters are now, I think one just finished all of them and the other one is still working her way through. And it's interesting to talk to them because even still, after all these years of popularity, I didn't realize that not only does the protagonist, like a minor character in one book, becomes a major character in another book, but also that sometimes the story, the old story, doesn't really wrap up until the next book. You've read them.
Well, no, I haven't, but I was thinking of Louise Penny. It's this exactly the same thing, and I've read every one of her books. And you just get so taken with the characters.
I have customers who own, it's like, you know, I used to have teenagers who would just read Harry Potter over again. I have customers that really read every Louise Penny over and over again.
Yeah. I can believe it.
Yeah. I can't, but because it's rare for me to read a book twice, but I have lots of customers that reread books every year, but it's so interesting to me to read a series, but she just towers over everybody else right now, you know, just in terms of a certain customer, you know, being obsessed with her work.
And I would recommend, again, you know, start at the beginning if you can and take it one after the other.
A lot of folks think that she does get better, though. We were selling her, I mean, I've been a bookseller for a long time, we like from the very first book we were hand selling that series.
Yeah, it's you just, and there's such interesting characters, you know, the poet who carries around a duck with her, and there's so many, and sometimes you know, as you say, sometimes a sort of a minor figure in one book, the next book that person is the major point, although there's always the inspector.
Right. So you do really want to start with Still Life, which just about every bookstore in the world is, you know, maybe not a bookstore that only sells science fiction, maybe not have it. But I don't know. A lot of actually like mystery bookstores have expanded into lots of other genres and do a lot. You know, a lot of kids bookstores sell adult books and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think she does get a little better as she goes along too. Yeah. Still Life, though, would be the place to start for sure. Well, let's take a call. Robert in Decorah, Iowa. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to say that since I've retired, I'm 67, that I've never really gotten into books until I started by myself in the house here. And I went through the classics like Sherlock Holmes and Huckleberry Finn, which, you know, you're supposed to read in high school, but I never did. So it was pretty interesting. And now I've gotten into what my kids used to look at is these anime books or novels, we call them. The one I'm really into is Sword Art Online, which is this big series. And it gets pretty well into what people are happening and how things are going, you know, the troubles they get into. And another one I like is Disney After Dark. And that was only a 3 or 4 book thing, but it was fascinating. And every time a new one came out, I was at the bookstore trying to get it. So,
well, Robert, I thank you very much for calling. I'm trying to think. Disney After Dark.
Oh, there's so many manga and anime series. We are actually in the process of moving books around, sections around, just to expand. Because for a while we sort of left it to other stores, but you can't. He's so right. There's so many people that's what they read, and I have at least 2, maybe 3 booksellers that, you know, maybe half the books they read are manga. And once you're in a series, like, you just keep going and going and going.
Yeah.
Long, generally.
And when you say manga or anime, well, somebody's going to say, well, what does that really...
Well, I think it is, you know, it grew out of Japanese culture, but it's well beyond that. And even, you know, books in the style of that, like, I don't know, I'm sure somebody can say that I'm wrong on this, but Heartstoppers, which is the Netflix series, which is more of a love story, it still is in that sort of style. So there is a sort of artistic style to the books that have sort of video game-ish in a way. But anyone who has Cartoon Network can watch, you know, anything on at midnight on Cartoon Network pretty much looks like it. Now you'll all have to set your timers to get up at midnight and watch it.
Daniel Golden, our guest today. Well, let's talk about some other ones. A lot of folks like to read about crime and current events, and I think you had a pick under that category.
I did. I do. I really loved. I love true crime is one of the many genres that has exploded in current generations that maybe was a little dormant for a while. I remember guest bookselling at a store, and I said, and somebody had asked for true crime, and I said, "Where's your section?" She's like, "We don't have that section." I hope they have it now. But a lot of times, you know, I like the intersection of sort of the ones that are sort of from a more journalistic perspective, like Killers of the Flower Moon. One book that we did incredibly well with is Say Nothing by Patrick Radden Keith. And then he had Empire Pain, which has also won a bunch of awards. And he writes for The New Yorker. And so you don't usually see collections of articles come out as books nowadays, but he has one called Rogues. And it is, I would say it's almost all crime of a certain kind, from traditional, there is, I think, at least one traditional serial killer story, but also business crime and corporate crime. And then one bonus that didn't fit the theme, but sort of couldn't be left out, which was he did the last profile of Anthony Bourdain before he died. And very intense, like traveling around the world with him. So good. I don't know if you've ever read Say Nothing or Empire of Pain, but he's just like, he's such a good storyteller. And to me, these are like, mm-hmm. 10 novel, you know, like the way people talk about Alice Munro and short stories, that each one's a novel. And I felt like this is the way his articles are. Like, you feel like you've had the sweep of a 300-page book in, you know, 40 pages.
Amazing. Amazing. And I haven't read it.
It'll give you a unique take on the IRA and the Troubles. I've read a lot of, like, fiction, and I've read some nonfiction on the Troubles, and he takes it, and it's really one murder that is the hook for that book that spins it off into all these directions. It's a disappearance, I should say. But it's terrific. We still have people years later coming back talking about how much they loved it.
Let's turn to memoirs, because you have a couple of memoirs on your list. And let's look at, what about Fly Girl by Anna Hood?
You know, Anne Hood's such an interesting person because she's written like 30 books. She's written knitting books, and she's written a grief memoir, and she's written lots of novels for adults, and she wrote a 10-book kid series. But one of the things she said is whenever people would talk to her, when they find out that before she was a writer, she was a flight attendant, that's all they want to talk about. But she said for years, this is, you know, obviously she hasn't been a flight attendant in a long time, but she didn't really know how to tell the story that wasn't just like party conversations. But I really think that over time, she actually turned it into a sort of a making of the writer arc. There's a book I really love, a novel called Writers and Lovers, another restaurant book, that sort of documents in fictional form the life of this person before she became a writer. And basically as a female, as opposed to the traditional male making of a writer story, kind of plays with those tropes. And that's what she does. And it also felt like she works so hard to get the job, and then it's deregulation when she gets the job. And so it's pretty glamorous, but it's all downhill from there. And it's never quite glamorous because she's always at the bottom of the totem pole, and you don't realize that it takes a long time. It's like being a mail carrier and you get the really bad shifts with all the steps and all the dogs, and it takes you years to get a good shift. And it's the same with her. Like, she doesn't have a regular shift. She can go to San Francisco, but only in the really bad, like, when all the planes get canceled during the winds. She can go to Las Vegas, but only in the summer. So, and things just get worse and worse. And, you know, she got a bit of a bun rap because the book got a cranky review in the Times because it was reviewed with a nonfiction book about the stewardess revolt. And the reviewer thought that the book was too perky, let me just say. But I disagree. I felt like she addressed all the issues that flight attendants had to address, from sexism to weightism to not being allowed to be married at one point, to treating male pilots different from female flight attendants. The male pilots got their own rooms. The flight attendants did not get their own room. And she addressed it all, but she was also like a 21-year-old woman, and she wanted to have fun. And I thought it was delightful.
So, Fly Girl by Anne Hood. What about Cindy House?
Well, not as very interesting, beautifully written, not as funny, though she has her own interesting sense of humor, which is only interesting because she was discovered kind of by David Sedaris. She was actually, David Sedaris graduated from the Art Institute of Chicago School, and he wasn't doing anything, and their writing teacher dropped out at the last minute. And they said, could you fill in? He's like, I don't know how to write, teach writing. Okay. And Cindy House turned out to be, I think, his favorite student. And now she has this memoir. And it's a tough memoir because the struggles are, she was a heroin addict. And so she also, it is also a restaurant story. I guess a lot of people work in restaurants who wind up being writers. But it is very much about addiction. She addresses the stories in lots of different ways. There's some that are, she was actually in the art program. So she tells a story through almost like paintings, illustrations. Mm-hmm. Reminded me of Visit from the Goon Squad, the Jennifer Egan chapter in the PowerPoint. She has a story about like a chronicle of the halfway house. And then her other issue is really parenting. She has one child from her first marriage. And then she had a lot of struggles with her second marriage because her husband's second new wife was trying to kind of poison the relationship with her dad. So that's it. But it winds up turning out to be as happy an ending as you'll get. And she's got a really great style. And David Sedaris on his tour was like bringing her around on tour and introducing her at every event. I mean, I just love him in so many ways, but one of them is the way he will champion other writers.
Yeah. Yeah. Wonderful. Let's go to Jim in Waupaca next. Jim, hi. Thank you for calling.
You were talking a few minutes ago about mysteries written in a journalistic style. There was an author, I don't know if she's still writing, but she used to be a reporter for the Miami Herald, crime reporter, and she wrote a bunch of books, and some of the best writing that I've encountered in the mystery genre, and that's Edna Buchanan.
Oh, I think she passed away, but she has a lot of books. Yeah, she's terrific.
Edna Buchanan. Jim, thank you. Appreciate it. This whole mystery business, the one, you know, there was one, I don't know if it'd be, if you'd call it a mystery thriller or whatever, but I read No Exit by Taylor Adams. And it's kind of a mystery in a way, because she winds up in the mountains during a snowstorm, and she pulls into a rest stop, and there's a few cars there, and one of the cars she happens just to notice in the back a van that there is a child back there in some chains or tied up. And so she goes in to the rest stop, and there's like five people in there, and she's trying to figure out which person belongs to that car. And then from there, it turns into a pretty exciting book with a good ending. It's a good ending in the end. But I don't know why I wound up with that book. I picked it up somewhere. I just thought, oh, you know, this might be interesting, and it was quite a good read.
You know, that's the secret of bookstores, is that we hope that you'll come in and find something you're like, I don't know why I have this, but that's why I have it. I mean, I think that's why, you know, that everybody's trying to unlock the secret of browsing all the time. There's a new app that people are very hot on, but we're hoping that coming to the store, you find things that you wouldn't have expected to find. The dirty little secret about mysteries is like, if there's any chance of you having a higher profile author, everything's fiction or thriller at the big retailers, because mystery is considered niche. And so they don't even like someone like Louise Penny or, you know, Sue Grafton or something like that. They'll never be labeled, once they break out, they'll never be labeled mystery, like in the, in the categorization. They'll be labeled fiction or thriller.
Here you've got this incredible bookstore. There must be an art, or is there a marketing science behind how you organize your books in your store? You know, everything from, is there traffic flow? Is there, what is the...
You know, everybody has different... you know, that's the wonderful thing about independent bookstores, is that we all are very independent and we all do things a different way.
Yeah.
So, you know, somebody I know is opening a bookstore and asked for advice. And I said, well, put the kids section in the back so the kids don't run out the store, but you know, that you can catch them before they run out the store. And I was like one of them. I had tried to make, when we started, like zones. So, you know, all the different kinds of fiction are together, and we had like things that were more issue-y, and then things about the mind together, and things about the home together, you know. So we tried to put like cooking and gardening and crafts and health together, and then things like how should one say it? The arts, you know, mm-hmm. together. But yeah. Then we got stuck because we didn't know where to put sports, so that wound up in the middle of the arts. And then we didn't know, we couldn't figure out a way, because we wanted you know, because there are sections that aren't always near each other. So one of the struggles that our buyer Jason has that he's trying to resolve is he really hates that our science section is in one part of the store and the nature section is really
in
far
another,
away.
Oh.
It's near gardening, and science is near psychology and philosophy. You know, it's sort of in that back area near history. And so you can't, you know, that's the problem, is that it is, you know, you're basically stuck because of the architecture sometimes. So you never quite get it right, which means just why you see a lot of stores move sections around. But part of that is like, I don't like change, but I work with a lot of people who love change, so they always want to move stuff.
Daniel Golden, our guest today. Questions for him, or maybe an experience to share or a book to recommend. I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You could email us to ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So happy to have you with us today on the Ideas Network as we take a look at the summer reading list of Daniel Golden. Daniel, of course, is the owner of Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee, independent book company. It's a wonderful place to visit. I hope you get a chance to do that. But in the meantime, hey, listen in as he gives you his list of 20 books to read, and we hope you'll join in too. Talk about books maybe you love. Maybe talk about a book that, or a suggestion of your own, of a book that you've read that you like really well, a newer book. Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@WPR.org. ideas@WPR.org. Jim in Evansville, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to recommend a book that is probably the funniest book I ever read. It's a book called Maximum Bob by Elmore Leonard. The book is absolutely hilarious. It's about a judge down in southern Florida who always gives the maximum sentence, so he's got the nickname Maximum Bob. And the book revolves around all the characters that orbit this guy.
Okay, and probably some of the trials or whatever that are in there.
It's just hilarious.
Maximum Bob, Elmore Leonard. Well, Elmore Leonard.
How many have you read? I've read like 20. and that's probably only like a fifth of what he's written. I went through this period where I just couldn't read, like, I'm sort of getting back into like being a completist, and I sometimes read two Elmore Leonards a month. I think I read three in a row. They were being when he exploded. I think his first New York Times bestseller, I think, might have been Glitz, and they started republishing all these little mass markets and stuff. And I'm like, okay, got another one. And some of them were like, I read a Western, but he is so smart and so funny. He is missed. But there's lots to read. I will say there is an author that I think kind of approximates him. He's winning every award. And I probably mentioned before, S.A. Cosby, Sean Cosby. His two popular books were Razorblade Tears and Blacktop Wasteland. So he incorporates, like, one is a heist book and one is a revenge book. But they're funny. They're smart. They're violent, as are Elmore Leonard books sometimes. But they also deal with race a lot in a way, but actually that Leonard did too, but from a black author's perspective. I can't recommend him highly enough for somebody who likes Elmore Leonard.
Jim, thank you very much for calling. So that's another name to keep in your mind. Kathy in Oshkosh emailed. She just got done reading Fresh Water for Flowers, and she can't recommend it highly enough. Fresh Water for Flowers.
Do you think it's a novel? Is it a mystery?
I don't know.
I'm guessing it's a nature book, but I don't know. We need to know what it is, because you can go in kind of two different directions with that. I hope everybody is like searching for it right now.
I'm actually searching for it.
We're all searching for it. The producers are searching for it. Valerie Perrin, a moving... Oh, no, it's not. It's not a nature book. A moving novel of love, grief, and loss about a cemetery keeper. I just want to say that I think that she's going to like this. She's going to like this Remarkably Bright Creatures book I recommended. So it's a good grief book. But now Valerie Perrin's Fresh Water for Flowers is going to be another book that people know if they've already read Remarkably Bright Creatures. Gravediggers, groundskeepers, wow.
And Jack just emailed. He said that Edna Buchanan has not passed.
Oh, sorry. She just isn't writing anymore. Okay. Apologies. My apologies. Many happy returns.
She just hasn't been writing for a while. Well, let's see. There's Did we talk about the biography?
No, we didn't. We haven't really done any nonfiction. So it's a bit of an, I don't read too many biographies. I do read more memoirs. But I'm a little, this has been a bit of a soapbox for me. It's a book called The Adventures of Miss Barbara Pym by Paula Byrne. It is not even officially, it's imported here. It's not, it took about a year to be imported from Great Britain. It has, however, gotten a lot of attention. A Washington Post review, a New York Times review, Wall Street Journal, and I think like five pages in The New Yorker. And Barbara Pym is one of these sort of British authors that periodically gets discovered and forgotten. She, you know, to the point that even happened when she was alive, she writes sort of parlor room comedies, I guess you would say, sort of in little British villages, but she was a little more progressive than you expect her to be. When the 60s came and like times changed and things got swinging, her publisher dropped her and said, "You're too old fashioned. We don't want to publish you." And she wasn't published for about 15 years. And then they did the British press did a thing on the most underrated writers of the 20th century. And she came up twice. So then they started publishing her again. Then she won the Booker Prize. And then there was what was interesting about her is she left a lot of notes. She had a biography, but the biography was by her friend. And so she left out a lot of things about the author. And so this book kind of investigates, really uncovers a lot of the papers. Her struggles with, she never married. She had a lot of bad love affairs, including with a Nazi soldier, which people don't like to talk about. But it's part of history that the British, before they realized, she became a very adamant worker for Great Britain and during the war. But before that, they didn't really know where they stood on these things. And so this is sort of a blot on her. But it's a really interesting book, and if I hope it'll help people introduce her to Barbara Pym's novels. She is at the level of Jane Austen, who was also forgotten at one point, and I don't know what it'll take for her to actually truly come into her own. I think the books are going to have to go into public domain, so somebody will publish books that are in stock and without ugly covers, for example. So if I dare say, but, That's my biography. Pick
you
your
know,
own.
When you were talking about the sort of going out of style, there was a writer, and she just wrote these cat mysteries, Cat Who mysteries.
Oh, sure. Lillian Jackson Braun.
Lillian Jackson Braun. And she went out of style. But what she did, she just kept writing those, but she just saved the manuscripts. And then she had like 20 of them written, and then those kinds of books came back in style, and then she just started meeting them back out again.
When I worked in a bookstore in the 80s, we couldn't keep them in stock. We would sell so many of those little mass markets of the Cat Who. And you know what? I think it really led to a whole genre of animal mysteries, and there are certainly others. There's certainly other cat mysteries. Rita Mae Brown had cat mysteries, and you know, any number of other people. It's absolutely true. She couldn't get published, and then they discovered her again. And so we're just calling on, you know, I think maybe Book Talk is going to do stuff like this, you know, because it's so influential now. Certainly, that's sort of Colleen Hoover's story. She was published, I have to get this right. But she was publishing herself, and now she's with big publishers again. And with two other authors, I was saying, you can't really rely on the New York Times bestseller list and paperback right now to find lots of new books, because 2/3 of the paperback list are from 3 writers. Colleen Hoover has 5 books. Emily Henry has 3 books, and Taylor Jenkins Reid has 2 books. That's 10 books out of 15, and they're there every week. So you have to search a little more afield if you like to read paperbacks, and the hardcover list turns very quickly. So you have to keep your hardcover list from last year and find out what went into paperback. Colleen Hoover sort of has this sort of resurgence story, and that really was from social media and people talking her up and her having a very strong following. That's what Lillian Jackson would be. She would be on TikTok right now. Maybe.
Well, I got reading those books just for fun, you know, and Wound up naming the cat. One of my cats is named Coco.
Oh, you're real. You are like you have a light. You have the fan club membership, don't you? You should have little conferences.
Judy in New Franklin. Let's go to you next. Hi, Judy.
Hello.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Okay, just a minute.
Oop.
Okay, I was recommended a book, a summer read, The Stranger in the Lifeboat by Mitch Albom.
Mitch Albom's book.
Yeah. And I've read several of his books, and I just find that it's a really kind of easy read, but it kind of makes you think a little bit, too, about what you pray for.
Yeah. Judy, thank you. Have you read... I actually read that book.
Oh, there you go. Then you should talk about it more. Or I wanted to know, Judy, like she said, she's read several. Is this her favorite of all of them? Or is this the one is still Five People You Meet in Heaven or something still her top Mitch Albom pick?
Well, you know what? My favorite of his actually is Tuesdays with
Maury.
Oh, sure.
Maury, yes. That was actually my favorite of him. Just because, again, too, it makes you think about your own mortality. And I'm a nurse, so I know a lot of things about, I guess I witnessed a lot of people passing.
Yeah.
And what's important to them when they know they're handed that sentence, I guess. So, and I just remember thinking one of the biggest things I, as a nurse, would always feel like, I never want to let my patients die alone. So that book brought that up to me.
Hmm.
You know, there's so many books that wind up hitting a heart, you know, a nerve like that. I've been thinking that book that never seems to stop selling, The Boy, the Horse, The Mole, the Horse, Fox and the Horse by Charlie McKeesey. I think that's part of why Midnight Library by Matt Haig's been on the list for about two years.
Yeah.
It's, you know, we can talk about it every time. But I think these books that sort of confront our mortality and how we want to live are continue to be moving to us.
So. Oh, Judy, thank you so much. Yeah, Midnight Library. I read that. How many? It must be 2 years ago.
Almost 2 years. Yeah.
Sort of along the same vein of what Judy was talking about there for sure. Patricia in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi, Larry. Aloha. I just want to recommend a book that I purchased at Boswell, Angeline Boulie's The Firekeeper's Daughter. Our book club read it, and I have found out since that she has actually got a contract from Higher Ground with the Obamas to produce a movie and a second book.
Oh, and Patricia, it's good to hear your voice, by the way, as well. So
we've got a lotteries on it, won major prizes. It was published for the YA market, but a lot of adult book clubs are reading it as well. You know, it is, set in the Indigenous community, I think, in Michigan. And it is also a crime novel, you know, in addition to that, about a woman who is Indigenous in by birth, but isn't in the tribe. Kind of on the outside looking in, and so many wonderful reads on that. I would love this to continue in this, but I can't. I have to mention the mortality books. If we were talking about mortality books, I did have a book on this. This Time Tomorrow by Emma Straub, which is on the New York Times bestseller list right now, I think, or maybe it fell off. It's still on the independent bookseller list, so many of these books are time travel books because they I think time travel, it's fun, it's escapist, it's fantasy, but it also sort of confronts our decisions about decisions we made in life. And so this is about a young woman who finds a way to, she's in a bad relationship, bad job, and her father is in the hospital. And she finds this portal to the past, in the Upper West Side, a little guardhouse in a little apartment complex. And she goes back to when she was 16 and she keeps changing her decision. So it's a little Groundhog Day-ish.
Yeah.
So she keeps changing some of the decisions to improve her life, but she can't get her father to not die. And Straub wrote this book when her father was hospitalized for COVID. It's a beautiful book, but it's fun also.
All right. And Patricia, thank you very much. The Firekeeper's Daughter. I haven't read that one.
Yeah, I think you should. I think you would love it.
I will read that one. Thank you very much for the comment and the suggestion. Well, we have lots of suggestions coming yet from Daniel Golden of Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee. This is a lot of fun talking with him, and we've got a ways to go to get through the rest of the list, and so we will do that. But first, we need to take a look at the news and find out what else is in store for us. But Daniel will be with us right up until 12:30. Let's take that look at the news, and we'll be back. You can join in right now if you want to. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org with your own ideas or suggestions, or you can call 1-800-642-1234. Give a call or shoot us an email. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and we're talking with Daniel Golden, owner of Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee, and he's got a summer reading list, and we've been going through that reading list with him, and it's certainly taking your comments and questions as we move along, and I hope you join in. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Trevor emailed to ask what you think about audiobooks, and do you have any favorite readers?
Well, I actually don't listen, but so many people I know do.
Jill's a big one for
audio. Yeah, Jill. One of my booksellers does her recs, her staff recs. Jen read, actually, the David Sedaris Happy Go Lucky, listen to it on audio. I will say, it's nice to know that there is a way to use independent bookstores. It's called, Libro.fm. You link to your favorite independent bookstore, and a lot of bookstores, do that now. And of course, Overdrive and all, you know, there's all different kinds of ways to get them. So I don't have a favorite reader. I hear about people tell me what books are, because they're not in the store, even if you can get them sort of through us. I sort of like, you know how you have a certain amount of information. It's like a filing cabinet. And you're like, I ran out of space. I got to throw this away. I will say that one of my authors was talking about how they were experimenting with using AI for audiobook reading. And the people who, the actors who do the audiobooks, are, I'm sure, struggling with that. One book that I was recommending, Jackie and Me, about Jack Kennedy and Jacqueline Bouvier, Kennedy Onassis. He told me he had actually tried out to be the audio reader, and he did not get it. Do you think you'd have an inside track? But it's rare. One of my other author friends did actually get to read their own book. I think it's like having cover treatment that, if you throw a fit about something, you may have some sway, but for most writers, unless they're at the top tier, you don't really have ultimate control of who reads your audio or who designed your cover.
Yeah. Well, there are some good, we do chapter a day, you know,
right,
and here we have some great readers. Michelle Good's really good. Jim Fleming, of course, there's some really good ones, but I prefer to read the book.
Yeah. Do you know if the folks from chapter a day have been ever asked to actually do the official audio recording?
I don't know.
Wouldn't that be because
they're
somebody's
really
like
good readers.
One of the publishing executives is driving through or listening on And they're like, wow, that's a, we should get that person. It's another career for them.
I'm going to ask Michelle about that. And Jim, that's an interesting question. Not sure.
It's big business now. You know, there's a huge amount of audio being downloaded.
Cheryl in Eau Claire. Let's give you a chance now. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi there. I'm a Tom Clancy fan, and I read the latest Tom Clancy. Oh, the full title slips my mind, but it was by Bentley, because, of course, Tom Clancy's died, but I like the various authors, but this one, I read it like 2.5 days.
Wow.
I liked it. And he writes thick books.
Yes.
I have a question for you. As you know, they've been using other writers to write the Tom Clancy stories. Do you have a favorite non-Tom Clancy, Tom Clancy writer? Do you think that they, or do they all seem to fit the mold?
Some do and some don't. Sometimes I get too many characters and I get confused, but then I just have to go back and reread.
Yeah.
I guess I don't have a all-round favorite, but this Bentley one was good.
Let's talk up. Let's say Bentley's number one.
let's do it that way. Cheryl, thanks. You remember the title? I might have read that one.
But I don't. It just came out. And my mind is blank. Is there a good cookbook read? I can read a cookbook like a book.
I've been playing with, I really love that new book, The Walk by J. Kenzie Lopez Ault. I've been really fascinated because, he's a very good writer. I mean, he's won a bunch of awards. It's a big, you know, it's a bit of a fat book. The other thing I would say is so many writers of the best cookbooks are coming from, blogs and things still. Like in other areas, the blog, you know, it's now all video, but for some reason with the blog cookbooks, and I'm trying to think, I immediately thought of Smitten Kitchen. Is that it? I'm like, I can't even do it. I also really like that New York Times, No Recipe cookbook that came out last year. We sold that very well. But because I like to be a little creative, Smitten Kitchen. That's what I wanted to say.
I'm trying to remember the name. Jill Nadeau is going to help me here. Jill's going to. We had the author of a cookbook. It was really a kind of a history, a family history, and it was the restaurant they had in town for many years. And it's an interesting family history, but also the recipes in it are really good. There's my favorite pancake recipe in the world for oatmeal pancakes. I got out of that book, and I love it. And it's fairly new book, and I just can't think of the title. And we interviewed the author, for goodness sakes, and I can't remember. But Cheryl, soon Jill will give me all that information, and I will spit it back to you.
It is one of those things. I'm always looking for good food narratives, and I had one the last time we were on the Secret History of Food that I really liked. But I have to say that I'm still... I was like complaining that it's just hard to find. And even you think that booksellers, they, you know, were writing our recs like crazy and trying to hand sell and letting the publishers know how well we're doing. But they're like, you know, it comes to some of these food narratives, they're like, we don't need you. So it's hard for me to, I have to dig through our shelves just like everybody else and find something good.
The book title is Manna Cafe.
Very nice.
Manna Cafe. It just popped into my head after I looked at the note that Jill sent me. there you go. That's one to take a look at, Cheryl. Don, thank you for calling. Donald and Merrill, we'll go to you. Hi, Donald.
Hi, how are you today? I'd like to talk about, there's a very interesting series that started out with a book called John Dies at the End. And it is interdimensional comedy, fictional craziness that is very hard to put down. I've read it multiple times. Everyone that I've recommended it to across the board has said, wow, I have never read anything like that in my life. And imagine Stephen King, Hunter S. Thompson, and Terry Pratchett all collaborating in a book, and you kind of get a sense of what this is about. It is just an awesome book. There was a movie written, or there was a movie, but it was paltry compared to what this move or what the book series is about. The author is David Wong. That's his pen name. The actual, his real name is Jason Parkin, and he's from Illinois area. And I highly recommend it. It started off with John dies at the end, and now it, I believe it's in its fourth. He's coming out with the fourth in the series of that. It is a ride.
Well, Donald, thanks. Have you, you know that book?
Yeah, I do know the book. I haven't read it. It's funny how it's the kind of book that I would think that like five of my booksellers would have had and were recommending. They just got me to read another book like that called Dare to Know by James Kennedy that just came out in paperback. And it's this guy works for this company that calculates exactly when you're going to die. And he basically, the guy goes rogue because one of the things you're never allowed to calculate your own death. And of course he does. And he died like 12 minutes ago. So, So a little philosophy, a little craziness, that kind of thing. But there's a lot of, a lot of books out there that are sort of playing, you know, I think this comes from a lot of streaming series popularity and our knowledge about technology and things that I think that we're really moving further and further into the mainstream of fantasy, speculative horror. Put back our horror section. Grady Hendrix is an author who sells like crazy there. One book that I was thinking of in terms of an author who sort of writes in the genre, who has a book coming out soon, is Blake Crouch. His new book is called Upgrade, and it's about like DNA code and modifying your DNA becomes illegal, and of course it gets into all these philosophical questions at the same time. It's a fast-paced thriller. I think we've had three booksellers read him so far. I think his most popular book, some of his books have been adapted to television series and things, but they weren't his most successful books. But his, I think his, the one that a lot, Wayward Pines, was one of the books that became his series. And then his book that we do the best with is Dark Matter.
Dark Matter.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's speculative thriller, a little of everything, you know.
Donald, thank you again for calling. I appreciate it. I want to go back to the historical fiction. And there's been, I'm thinking of a Madison author, Jennifer Cheverini's done a lot of that and done pretty well with it, too, I think. But you mentioned there's one about the Kennedys.
Yes. And this is, so one of the things about Jennifer, because she has a new book coming
out
in seconds. Switchboard Soldiers, is that what it's called?
Yes.
Yeah. Very exciting. She'll be doing stuff around Wisconsin for that. And I've enjoyed reading several of her books, and I know you do too. She is very, when she writes historical fiction, she's like, she is going through the newspapers. She's very detailed, and she really tries, she skews it close to the facts as she can get. And I would say that's the difference between historical fiction and period fiction. But even she has to sometimes do composite characters, for example, or change something to make it work as a novel. And so one of the books that's on my list is called Jackie and Me by Louis Bayard. He's written books that were more along the lines of thrillers, but he's definitely writing, his last few books have been sort of in the margins of history, like trying to figure out what happened. So this book is about Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy Onassis, and Jack Kennedy, and perhaps how they met. And the story is told through a confidant of John F. Kennedy's, Kirk LeMoyne Billings, who is known as Lem, who was his close friend in growing up, and became a walker for the Kennedy women, and was asked to sort of feel out Jacqueline Bouvier. So you don't really get the thing about it is like he sort of comes between them, becomes the go-between, but they each ask him to promise something and he can't do everything. And so this is from his perspective many years later, when he, like in the last year of his life. It's a funny book. It's poignant. There was a lot of research that went into it. And one of my booksellers who's now retired, Jane, who had a very good following with book clubs, really loved sort of the class difference and the way the parents at the time, what, you know, the way Bouvier's mother would kind of like, kind of had so much involvement. I mean, it's not necessarily an arranged marriage, yeah, but she was definitely very involved in what she wanted for her kid. And Jane said it's her favorite book she's read this year. So,
wow.
Yeah.
You had another one called Horse.
Yes. Geraldine Brooks is a wonderful writer. She was actually a journalist originally. And ever since Year of Wonders, her first novel set during the plague, she has developed a big following. This book is on the bestseller list right now. This book reminds me a lot of another book that received wonderful reviews, People of the Book, which was about the Haggadah that was saved in the Bosnian War and how it passes through. This is also looks at the life of winningest, most successful thoroughbred in American history, from a contemporary perspective of an art historian, graduate student, and a researcher at the Smithsonian, through two things: this horse's bones and a mystery painting.
Wow!
And then it goes back in time to tell the story through the eyes of this horse and his handler, his black handler. And what this book does, there's definitely a thriller, a tension, a bit of a thriller element to it. But the book is really about race and how slavery is connected to the thoroughbred industry. It's a terrific book. And
wow.
We're doing well. She's doing some kind. We actually have a free event. We have a free virtual event tonight if you go on our website. So it's free.
And what's your event? Tell me.
It's Geraldine Brooks in conversation with, I can tell you who she's in conversation right now, Sarah Maslin-Neer. And you just go on our website, you click to register, or actually I think you register and you'll get the link, and it's on tonight at 7. Anybody can listen, and they can buy the book at their favorite bookstore, independent bookstore, wherever that is in the country, or in Wisconsin, or wherever you want. You just don't have to tell me about it to buy it from somebody else. Just do what you need to do, as I say.
Oh, man. Well, you put a book about gaming on the list.
I did. It's Wisconsin-y. It's Slaying the Dragon. It's a history of Dungeons & Dragons. I am not a Dungeons & Dragons player. Are you a Dungeons & Dragons player? However, so many of my booksellers are. It's really, what's so interesting is it's become much more popular and with younger people. It's taken on a new life. But back when I was a buyer, when TSR, which made Dungeons & Dragons, was placed in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, there was a real connection to here. And we had Gen Con, which was based here. There are other histories that say what might have happened to TSR to have it sell out to Wizards of the Coast. But this book sort of looks at the players and takes some people that might have been considered villains and validates them, and takes other people who might have gotten a pass and said they really screwed up the company. It's an interesting corporate history. It's great for anyone who likes gaming. I mean, it's interesting. If you live in Southeast Wisconsin, you might know some of the people in this book. I knew two of them from Weird Things. I worked with one years ago, and another one is in one of our book clubs, for all things. So this guy, it's coming out on, I believe it's coming out on July 19th. We've had three people read the book already, and we've all really, and he did a, Ben Riggs, who's the author, he's a local guy, did a really great job.
You have City of Refugees by Susan Hartman under, and you have that listed under community journalism.
I create my own categories, Larry. And what I consider that to be is when there's sometimes like academics and sometimes, but often journalists, and they follow people, a certain number of people, through a period of time. So there's a real investment to investigate, to look at some sort of issue. The most famous contemporary book that I can think of is Matthew Desmond's Evicted, where you're really learning the stories, and it brings the issue to life. Another one that I thought was Behind the Beautiful Forevers. So I have to say, if they don't win a huge prize, and they're not the easiest book for me to sell, but I love them. And so this book is actually about a really important issue. It's about refugees, and it follows three refugee families in Utica, New York, which was a city on the outs. You know, they had lost a lot of manufacturing, they lost some corporate headquarters, and it was the point where they were setting a lot of arson and things, and they decided to they had a history of immigration in the town, and they decided to go all in on welcoming refugees to the town, like Lewiston, Maine, I think, mm-hmm. is another place like that. And,
yeah.
And so she follows an Iraqi gentleman and his family, a Somalian Bantu family, and a Bosnian family. Through the course of several years, about how they survive, how they thrive, what the setbacks are, and how it affects the community. That's the most important thing.
Wow.
You know, Wisconsin's taken in a lot of refugees, yeah. And this was when I read the book. We were just accepting a lot of Afghan refugees, and I worked with a few local groups there on the event, on a program we had, and also a virtual program, and also on providing some books for some families. And so it was important to me. I also had just read a book called Refugee High about a high school in Chicago. And it was the same sort of, I call that an education book, it's the same sort of journalism thing. Like, you're following these people's lives, and their lives are as interesting as novels. So yeah. I highly recommend them. But I have to say, this is my little soapbox, and I don't have that much soap in it, I guess.
And you mentioned one event that you've got tonight.
Yes, we have one tonight. That's right. I have to run back to run it.
Oh my goodness! And I think just going to your website. I mean, you've got a great site. I love that site.
Oh, you're very kind. Yeah, we do a lot of programming in person, virtual. We share. So tonight's event is with three other bookstores and a library system, and we're doing an event with for the Sarah Thanka Matthews for All This Can Be Different. We're actually, it's virtual, but we're doing it with Room of One's Own in Madison. We're doing the event together. We do it a series with a books and company in Econowoc. And if there was another store that said, I want to do an event with you, I'd say, okay. I like doing them. So.
Well, this has been most fun. And we didn't get through your whole list, but you know what? We've got the list. And we've got it posted on ideas at WPR.org/Larry. If you go there, we've got the whole list. There are a couple of others. We're just out of time.
You know, I always do too, Betty. It's fine.
Daniel, thank you. You'll come back and be with us again?
I would love to. Thank you very much.
Oh, Daniel Golden, our guest today. And he, of course, is the owner of Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee. For me, it's always a great fun to have a chance to visit with him and especially for 90 minutes like we did today. And I'm looking forward to reading some of these books and also looking forward to having him back. Speaking of having people back, Jeff Epping from Olbrich Botanical Gardens is back tomorrow on Garden Talk to talk about gardening in dry conditions. We'll also talk about lawn alternatives. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store. I'm Larry Mealer.